Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024, performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? It's your boy Offset. I will be live June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Meth Man.
What's up, rap world? This is Red Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T. Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Hey, it's TT Torres, and when artists come through New York, they know they gotta tap in with me, TT. Now you can tap in with me too through Hot 97's newest podcast, Tap In with TT. Every Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tap In with TT Torres.
Tap In with TT Torres, a Hot 97 podcast.
It's Ebro in the Morning with Laura Stiles and Rosenberg.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Ebro in the Morning with Rosenberg, and Laura Stiles is on assignment, and joining us, NBA legend Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Please. Yeah, talk about this new book before we get into the history of Muggsy Bogues.
Yes, Muggsy, the kid from the projects who the godfather of small ball, just was released on April the 12th last month. And I wanted to put this out mainly because, you know, we all go through things, and a lot of kids, especially I want the parents to understand, if they have kids, and, you know, we all go through times where we lack our confidence and we don't believe in the things that we capable of doing in our head. And I just want to give them a sense that anything is possible, especially when you understand the importance of confidence and how I was able to impact players that I play with as well as current players today. So it's about relationships. Me and my wife, you know, separated 10 years and we divorced and we found our way back with one another in 2015.
Wow. You were broken up for how long?
We was divorced for 10 years. You know, which was unheard of in terms of getting back with that individual.
So let's focus on confidence, right? 5'3", playing in the NBA, right? Your whole game, that was everything, right? Physical ability and believing in yourself and knowing what you're capable of. That's
the ultimate. That's where it all starts. And it started as a kid, you know, believing in yourself, having that understanding that you can be whatever you want to be. And I know that seemed like a cliche, but when you have that type of confidence within yourself, you know, anything is possible, you know, and you're in total control of it. And I felt like I was in control of my destiny. And I think what allowed me to reach it was the things that I endured as an early child. At the age of 5 years old.
This is in Baltimore?
In Baltimore, growing up in the city of Baltimore, getting shot at the age of 5.
Mm.
You know, that thing, that dramatic experience changed my mindset. Which, you know, when the kids was being cruel on me on the basketball court because of my size, you know, after going through all that, those words was the least of my worries. You know, and hearing that allowed me to kind of focus more or less on the skill set that I needed to learn as opposed to me just being short and them making fun of me. But once I understood that game and the confidence continued to grow, that's where the journey began.
Did you go to a Dunbar in Baltimore? Where'd you?
I went to Dunbar High School in Baltimore, Maryland, which we was fortunate enough to have four of my teammates make it to the NBA.
Who else on that Dunbar team?
It was myself, the late Reggie Lewis.
I thought so, yeah.
Who played with Boston Celtics, Reggie Williams, who was drafted fourth overall on that draft. And then David Wingate,
That was one high school team.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they consider us as probably the best high school team that ever.
Is it the best Dunbar? It's the best Dunbar team of all time?
Yeah, absolutely. We went 59-0 for two seasons. we had each player on that team get a Division I scholarship.
Wow.
So you got the 15 kids that was fortunate enough to go D1. And four of us out of that group was fortunate enough to make it all the way to the NBA.
Who was, in your eyes at the time, who was the best player on that team?
Well, Reggie Williams was the best player. Reggie Williams was the number one player in the country.
Okay.
Yeah, he, at the time, him and Billy Thompson, kid that played in New Jersey up at Camden, I was considered a 1-2. And after we beat Camden, New Jersey by 30-plus points, we got that recognition, and then he got the recognition as being the number one player in the country.
And then Reggie Lewis ended up probably becoming the most prolific player in the NBA, at least from a scoring standpoint, until he passed.
Without a doubt.
So he just developed over time? Like, Reggie just got better and better?
No, Reg was always good. Reg just happened to be, and Coach understood that having that type of talent coming off the bench, because Reggie Wayans and him play the same position.
Mm.
But having that type of skill set coming off the bench, it just elevated that second unit and elevated our team even more. And Reg accepted that challenge and just took it on to Northeastern and became the player he knew he was capable of being. And he was the first All-Star amongst all of us.
That must have really floored all you guys when you lost him then. That must have been crazy.
Yeah,
it was so sudden.
It was devastating. You know, we was happening to be playing him in the playoff. You know, the Hornets playing against the Boston Celtics.
Right, right.
And he fell during the game, and we thought that he got tripped. And, of course, you know, afterwards, finding out the actual cause of it, I mean, it was devastating. Then finding out later on that summer, you know, he lost his life, you know, and that's when
at the practice facility, yeah.
Yeah, because I lost my dad a week before Reg had lost his life.
Wow.
So that was a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Understanding your role, right, like hearing you talk about just that dynamic in high school of a great player being a part of the second team, right? What did that teach you about understanding your role when it became time for you to lead teams, lead an offense, you know, start all of those things, right? Like understanding your role in any ecosystem, right? Because you existed as defensive tenacity, right? As well as setting up, you know, the rest of the team at your position.
Well, and 1 year, really a prolific scorer too. You averaged like 16 points and really kind of were a score first guy for a moment. So you did it all.
Well, I understood what my role was and what that position calls for as a point guard. And I know we got today's game a lot of scoring point guards, but back in our era was you had those traditional point guards, the John Stocktons of the world. But we also had scoring point guards, the Gary Paytons and the Tim Hardaway. So we had a little collection of both. But for me, having the understanding of who I was and what my role would be and how I could be impactful on the floor, I knew I had to know how to run a team. I had to make guys around me better, you know, as well as being tenacious on defense, making it very difficult for guys to bring the ball up the court, because that's where it starts. That's where the offense starts, as the point guard. Now, if you kind of disrupting that and allowing them to get in there, offense later part of the shot clock, then it seemed like you doing your job and you're putting them in a situation. And that's what I understood early on. And that gave me the ability to be the guy that I wanted to be on the floor, not coming off the bench, being able to run a team, start a team, and having the type of talent around you, knowing how to put those guys in a situation where they could be successful as it be less successful.
Well, because it was always, he's 5'3". So you had to show and prove in other ways, because they were gonna ding you with that 5'3" off top. Any scout, any coach, every time. So it had to be intellect and these other elements that you and I realized that, you know, sitting here talking to you in this book, but that comprehension and leaning into that work ethic and the work that it takes. How often, throughout your career, were you second guessed even after you proved yourself? Like, how often did it always come back to second guessing Muggsy Bogues because of his height?
Well, I always consider those second guesses, those were the ones that the inquisitive minds, you know. Once you were able to do it and able to showcase it and able to have that impact, then it should be okay, he should be included. But it's always going to be the case each level, because each level they feel like a guy's a bigger and stronger. You know, he may was successful at playing in an elementary school, but what's going to happen when he get to junior high school? You know, back then we didn't have middle schools. So it was junior high school.
Right.
So it was like, what are you going to do in junior high school? And then it's like, oh, well, okay, maybe so he had success in junior high, but the kids in the high school level a lot bigger and a lot stronger. So it's always been that proven aspect for me. But for me, it always been, and I always had that understanding, it's just people just don't know yet. And I always say the inquisitive mind, you just don't know. Because the way I impact the game as a point guard, you know, being out there, and it's all about just running your team, knowing how to make guys around you better being an extension of the coach. And you having that understanding and you having that type of impact on the floor, and me, as I say, you play against the best, you have success against the best, you need to be included with the best.
You started in Washington, and when I was a kid in 87, and we had Manute Bol as well at that time on the Bullets in D.C., and you guys were so beloved by the children of the D.C. area. What was that time like? What was Manute Bol like? I think John Williams was on that team.
Mm-hmm.
Was Bernard King on that team?
Bernard King, Moses Malone.
Moses was on the team. You had a lot of legends on
Jeff
there.
Malone. Yeah,
Jeff Malone, who was a fantastic player.
Terry Catlett, Darrell Walker.
Yep, Darrell Walker, hell of a vet.
Yeah, so those were my vets. Those were the guys that took me under their wing, and made Moses and Manute rest in peace. But that was the beginning, you know, playing with a guy like Manute, because when they see the tall and the short of it, of course they want to try to make the fun of it, but we were secure within ourselves.
Well, and you guys both, when you think about it, it's really interesting. If you're ignorant to the mm-hmm. sport, I could see you thinking Muggsy and Manute was sort of a novelty act. Mm-hmm. And then you guys both had fantastic careers. Manute's game developed as the years went on.
Absolutely.
Developed a three-pointer, mm-hmm. you know, could play great defense. Like, he was a really solid player.
He was
and, of
solid.
Course, a beloved, you know, a beloved guy, a hero in Sudan, just a wonderful person. What can you say about Manute as a guy? What was he like? Because everyone always has great stories.
I mean, he had an unbelievable personality. He was one of the funniest guys you can ever meet. And he and I, of course, we spent a lot of time together because we were the youngest, and back then we didn't have private planes. We used to fly commercial.
Yo.
And we had to go through the airports, and of course,
come on.
You only had 8 first class seats.
Right.
So you can imagine, Manute and I was one of the two that got bumped. So we in the back. And can you imagine a 7'6" in the back with his knees?
Oh, because y'all are the youngest too.
Yes, we didn't fly first class, so we had to fly coach. And he and I in the back, and his little knees all up to his chest and so forth. And he's sitting there trying to tell me about how he killed lions with a spear. You know? And I used to always joke. I'm like, what kind of lions you got out there? Lions with no teeth in their mouth? You know, and he's always the, you know, get us a joke us. Tell that joke about him killing lions. But he was such a joy to be around. I remember he and I was playing one-on-one, and Moses was just geeking it up. And you just like Manute, like to shoot jump shots,
yeah.
right? So even when he shoots a jump shot, he puts it right by his head.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
And I had a little vertical back then, and I can get up. So I blocked the shot, and boy, did that piss him off. He chased me around the gym for about 15 minutes. And boy, I never seen Moses laugh so hard. Man, we just in tears and stitches. Just
by the way, it's
watching Manute trying to catch.
And it's interesting because those guys who you came into, like, so it's 1987.
Yes.
The veterans on that team who had been in the league for 10, 12 years mm-hmm. had literally been in the NBA when the NBA was a totally different thing
yes.
than it was by the time you got there. Like, they didn't make a ton of money.
Right.
The league had drugs. It was out of control in the 70s.
Very violent, very physical.
Yeah. So, like,
smoking
what were those?
Cigarettes in the locker room. I'm like, what the hell?
Was it like that when you got there? Was it still like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was at halftime, and that's when I had.
Wait, cats were smoking cigarettes at halftime?
At halftime.
Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024, performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? Your boy Offset.
I will be live June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Mac, man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T. Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
One of our games, and I ain't got to name names, but at halftime, we go in the locker room, and I'm thinking, okay, man, we about to get this pep talk. And I see a couple guys get a brewski and smoking a cigarette. I look at Mo, I'm like, Mo, what? He's a little pimp. He used to call me pimp. Little pimp. Better get used to it. This is what them boys do at every halftime. I'm like, oh my God, I thought in that locker room would be Gatorade where I came from in college.
That is hilarious.
You went to Wake Forest, right?
Yeah, I went to Wake Forest. But that introduced me to the league, and that let me know that I was amongst men.
Yeah, it's a different sort of thing. Now, there's a story out there about you and Jordan. And Jordan being nasty to you in some way. Is that story true? What are your feelings on MJ?
Well, people want to keep making up stories, but that's an internet story.
Really?
Yeah, it's an internet story. Even though MJ always joking me and calling me little fella and all that type of stuff. But I think anything that happens on the internet is supposed to be true these days.
Right.
Yeah, so
that. So he wasn't unusually, he was a competitor, yeah, and would talk trash, right, but the same way he did to everybody.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, I think the internet story was that he supposed to have called me a midget.
Yes,
and
that's the story on the internet.
He was supposed to call me a midget, and that destroyed my career.
I don't know what that, but once you heard that, you fell apart.
After my 10th year in lead.
Yeah, and that would have been the first time someone had made that joke to you?
First time someone had made that joke about me. Come on, that's true.
You're man from Baltimore. Yeah. People have said worse.
Yeah, man from Baltimore, absolutely. And but the thing happened was the timing was, I had got hurt after the series and I was hurt during that series when we played Chicago. And right after the series, I had surgery on my knee, and that was one of the reasons. And then from that moment on, I missed the next year, the complete season, which I was only supposed to miss 6 to 8 weeks, but I wound up missing the whole complete season because my knee wasn't right. And that's when I discovered acupuncture, and I was able to get back on the floor. Mm. But my numbers had went down, and then they kind of...
They tied the story into MJ.
And him.
Was there any sort of bond between you and the other shorter guys in the league, the Spud Webbs, the Mark Prices? Was there any sort of like fraternity about you guys? Y'all had to work on a different level. Like, let's just be honest.
I mean, it's just a special fraternity within the NBA,
right?
You know, but in terms of us small guys having a special club.
Or a rivalry.
Not a special.
You didn't have beef with Spud Webb in these streets.
That's my guy.
Okay.
You know, Spud and I, we go all the way back from college. Him, NC State, I'm at Wake Forest.
Oh, wow. Y'all were battling.
So, yeah, we go all the way back from that era. And then Mark Price, I guess you consider him that small, being 6 feet tall.
Yeah, but I guess that's still quite a ways from
5'7" to 5'3". Yeah, but no, I mean, it was great, man, just to have guys represent, you know, because we had different variations of it. We had Michael Adams.
Oh, Michael
Adams. Michael Adams was
5'10", I think.
10.
He
had
nice.
Tim Hardaway. Then we had little Greg Grant that came in the league, yeah, was 5'5", played a little bit with the Knicks. And then, of course, Earl Boyden got his opportunity,
yep,
as well. But we was totally different. You know, I was different from all those guys. And I always looked at myself as that throwback point guard. You know, I was the pass first type of guy, which all those guys were more scoring, you know, trying to score more than.
And of course, Spud's dunk contest appearance sort of changed. That became sort of such a big part of his brand.
Absolutely.
Was the poster of him hitting the dunk.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it should be. I mean, 5'7", being able to get up like that.
How close could you get?
Well, I was able to dunk the basketball,
yeah, he could dunk.
But I just didn't never dunk in a game.
But I was going to say, but you never dunked in a game, right?
No, I had a 44-inch vertical.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But now,
you
were
had
hoping
to.
Now, hold on. But this is important. Because I know, in my mind, Spud Webb dunked.
Yes.
But on the court, I never saw Muggsy dunk.
Right.
So, did it ever, after
I want to say I saw it inside the NBA with like Ahmad Rashad or something back in the day or something, and you was dunking in like warm-ups or something.
Yeah, I'd warm-up game or tip in the ball, come and practice all the time. But
did you ever hope, though, especially after Spud had hit his dunk, mm-hmm, did you ever hope that you would get that moment in a game on a breakaway where you could hit the dunk in-game?
No, I had plenty of opportunities to do it.
And you just didn't go for it?
Nah, I just didn't go for it. I mean, two was two for me. You know, that's how I always look at
Later.
It. You know, yeah, yeah. But and then again, I never wanted to take the chance of having to go up there and buy yourself and then miss it a dunk.
Risk versus reward.
Yeah,
that's a great point.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, you know, coaches get upset when a guy don't finish that play. You know, especially when I've been the coach. If you're going to dunk, you better finish it. Especially yeah, if you're by yourself.
Right, right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? So, no, I never took that chance.
The new book, My Life from a Kid in the Projects to Godfather of Small Ball. You played with Steph's dad, didn't you, for a while?
Yeah, Dale and I played 11 years together.
Wow.
Yeah, 9 in Charlotte and 2 in Toronto. And, you know, of course, we got a special bond with one another. And
so you saw Steph from little. Speaking of small ball, even when he was in college, he was considered, at Davidson, he was considered too small.
Yeah, well, and that's one of the great things I love about watching Steph and watching his whole maturation of becoming who he is that as a kid, you know, giving this little kid that an airplane ride at the age of 4 years old in the locker room, and then not even knowing that he would turn out to be the greatest shooter ever laced up in the NBA, and him even doing the forward in my book, you know, mentioning that, you know, he just wished that he couldn't wait to get to 5'3", that he felt like he could make it into the NBA, and changing that perception of a kid, because everybody felt like you had to be 6 feet, 6'5".
How tall is Steph?
Steph is only 6'3", you know, but he still was considered small,
right? Yeah.
Because of his frame and his stature. You
he
know?
Seems smaller than 6'3" because of his thin frame. Yeah.
And is he 6'3"?
I'd say Bob's at least 6'2". I think about 6'2". Yeah.
But that's your homie, so you're giving him an inch. You done docked him an inch, so I'm going to dock him another inch just because that's family. Yeah. He might be 6 feet tall.
I agree. He might be. He feels more like 6'2".
You're talking like family. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's 6'2". Yeah. If you took an inch off, that means there's another inch we could probably take off.
Yeah, I think, with the shoes on, but he's right around that 6'2", 6'3".
Was he always playing back in the day as a kid?
Oh, always. I mean, they always had balls in their hands. I mean, him, my son, his Seth, I mean, they in the gym all the time. They went to practice with us. I mean, from Charlotte to Toronto, you know, they stayed in the gym with us. And that's something that we always, you know, ravished because they enjoyed the game. And they were just little sponges. You know, you didn't realize how much they were soaking up, but they were just soaking up all that information. Because you got to imagine, how many players have they been around? You know, they've been around a lot of stars, the LJs, the Zoes, myself, the Vince Carter, the Tracy McGrady's, and all that. So...
And you just mentioned that. We talked about who your sort of OGs were when you showed up. When Vince and T-Mac get to Toronto, you had the turn to be the OG. What was that experience like?
It was great. And they was well receiving too. I mean, they was all in and they wanted it. They wanted that leadership and they wanted us to take their pressure off them. What they just only need to just go play. They knew we had their back on every aspect of the game on and off the court. And we had guys that was a little forceful. We had Oak. We had
Of course you did.
Yeah, we had Charles Oak. We had Antonio Davis, Kevin Willis, and those guys. So that was the beginning of it, and that was the first year that Toronto Raptors was able to make it to the playoffs.
How
and
thrilling that was
the beginning.
It
was great. It was a great honor.
Did they go nuts up there?
Absolutely.
I remember the atmosphere on TV. Really do. In that first round series, I remember it looking insane in there.
Because you think about it, it's a hockey country.
Yep.
But basketball has grown rapidly so quickly, and it mainly due to Vince. Vince had a lot of impact on a lot of those kids. That's one of the reasons why you got the Andrew Wiggins, the Joseph in the league, you know, because of Vince. You know, Vince had really impacted those kids, and they believe that one day they could be just as good as he.
When you look at the game today, and if you were to insert yourself, would you have been the same player in today's NBA that you were then?
Well, I think you ask any NBA player, they feel like they can play in any era because that's just the confidence that they have within themselves. But looking at the rules today and the way the game is played today, it's open. I mean, it's no one that's camping in the lane. You're no one hand-checking you. Just got
it would have been easier in some ways
for you. I feel like I would have been successful. Yeah, I had a lot of good time. I don't want to say more successful, but I've been to have some really good numbers. Because
your quickness, your ability to move without the ball, you had to do all of that.
We got shooters out here. We got no one's camping in the lane. And then, of course, the way these guys dribble today, I mean, they dribble so high. And
you taking that?
You be taking
that. Yeah, I feel like them two balls allow that type of skill that became part of their game. And I think it's bad habits, really.
Well, I mean,
because you're looking, got your head down when you're dribbling two balls and not looking forward, and you're going down as opposed to north and south. So I'm opposed of the two ball dribbling.
Really? That's so interesting.
Yeah, you don't play the game with two balls.
So you would rather, when you're doing, when you're practicing,
working
work
skills.
The offhand and then work the right hand. You work your good hand and you work your offhand.
Yeah, what's the deal? I mean, what you do with your right hand, you do with your left hand. You can't do with your left hand and right hand at the same time. You ain't working. And the thing about it is that, and when you watch guys that do the two ball and how they dribbling, and they going side to side. The ball going,
and the ball's high, and
ball is going like this as opposed to going like so. It's
wait, got, my guy. I'm a Celtics fan. We got yeah. last night. Marcus Smart got picked on the last play of the game by Drew Holiday.
Yeah, yeah, and that was a
high dribble that got away from him.
Saw that coming. Yeah,
just took it.
And Marcus Smart knows better because he knows. When the ball goes down, that's when the opportunity we're going to...
He's a very fundamental player.
Yeah,
that was
shoot that, yeah. You know. Shoot the gaps in it.
Muggsy Bogues, man. It's great meeting you.
Same here. I really appreciate you guys.
Congratulations on everything.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Your health is great. Physical, feeling great. Still
no
in the gym.
Still in the gym. Still able. Still got my health, and I'm so thankful.
So you got your daughter's your publicist?
Yes, she is. She's my everything. She keeps me on point. All my scheduling and... where I need to be, as well as my foundation. She's the vice president of it as well, so I'm so thankful for her.
Hey, man, we really enjoyed this. Thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
Guys. Appreciate
Muggsy Bogues, y'all. Yes, man.
Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024 performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? It's your boy Offset.
I will be live
June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Meth Man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T. Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.